Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work. Oh my gosh, you guys. Leah Savoli is my guest today. Yay! Thank you, Leah, for joining me on The Work. I'm so happy to get to spend this time with you.
Oh my gosh, I know. I feel like it's been a while since we've really caught up.
True. But we also go way back. Like, do you remember what our first intersection was? Was it Hollywood Happy Hour or?
You know, I think our first intersection was actually MySpace.
Oh my God. Where
I discovered the Hollywood Happy Hour group. And I just remember coming across your MySpace blogs. And just really just, you know, feeling a vibe with you, a connection with you and on the same kind of wavelength. And maybe there were some numerology blogs or things of that sort, you know?
Totally.
And so I think I found you randomly without even realizing who you were and how you were connected to the industry and all that kind of stuff.
That's crazy. Cause you know, so many people become aware of me, not even knowing who I am, but knowing Self-Management for Actors or knowing the Actors Access columns or Backstage before that. And so our connection was actually personal first.
Yeah. Social media, personal first, a personal connection. And then from there, joined the Hollywood Happy Hour group. Absolutely. And then from there became one of your, you know, your first in-person SMFA weekly. This was when we did the weekly classes live in Los Angeles.
Which that was a long time. 2009, I'm guessing, was
it
when
we were
doing.
It might have even been like eight. It might have even been 2007 or eight. It was definitely in that window somewhere right around there.
Wow. Yeah. So, all right, take us back before your SMFA encounter, your career, your spark. What got you going as a creative? Take us on the journey a little bit.
Wow. Well, let's see, when I was born, you know, I think that's where a lot of us start. When I was one of those kids who, luckily I had a very large family and nanny and pop-up and aunts and uncles were always around. My mom was very young when she had me, just 19 years old. And so I was lucky to be surrounded by many different adults who were captive audiences. So I know one thing I used to like to do is walk around and pretend I was a waitress and just take everyone's orders. And they had to listen, you know, they had to participate. You know, I would role play with everyone. And then as my siblings came along and their four came along. So by the time I was 10, I had two little brothers and two little sisters to dress up and choreograph. I know that I always did something for the Super Bowl. I would put on the Super Bowl show and make my brothers and sisters participate. I think when my brother got to be about 9 or 10, he started to rebel against dancing and Madonna dances and things of that sort. So it started very young. And as far as like my first remembrance of being in front of an audience was first grade. And I was chosen. I went to a Catholic school called Our Lady of Loretta in Southwest Philadelphia. Go Philly, East Coast, what's up? But I remember I was chosen. It was the school's like bicentennial anniversary. And my essay on St. Maria Goretti was chosen to be read in front of, I believe it was the entire school. And from what my mom says, she was a complete nervous mess. And she said, but you weren't. And I got up there and I read my speech and that was it, you know, no looking back. Like I love being in front of people, you know, dance classes, tap, ballet, jazz, modeling, cheerleading, you know, you name it, I did it, gymnastics. And similar to who I am today, a little bit of everything, right? Like Leah's always had a hard time just honing in on like one thing and perfecting it, but I like this and this and this and this. And so I guess, you know, I really need to give props for my parents. I don't remember ever being told no. We lived on a very modest income, but somehow or another, they always pulled out the pennies to make whatever class I wanted to go to happen. So that was pretty cool.
That's amazing. And do you, especially now reflecting on it, do you believe that part of your entrepreneurial spark, your desire to do a lot of different things came from never having felt that there was a limit on the possibilities?
You know, that's a really good question. For a while there, I think I became limited. I would say once I hit middle school, high school, I did feel branded as the smart one in my family, the one that was going to go to college, the one that was going to become a psychiatrist or a teacher. My little sister has an incredible singing voice. Both of my sisters are better dancers than I am. But none of them went and pursued the creative field at all. My brother plays guitar. And I wish I could play guitar. Maybe one day I'll learn. I have one sitting in the living room. I just don't play it. It's, you know, but it looks pretty. I want it on a game show. So for a while, I feel like I did limit myself into thinking like, okay, you're the smart one of the family and that's your role. So for many years, that's where I was until about the age of 25. When I hit 25, graduated from school with psychology and elementary ed teaching degrees, honors, you know, summa cum laude and all that great stuff. And I like to call it my quarter life crisis. At age 25, split up with a gentleman that I had been with for many years. You know, we had an apartment off campus together. I was about a halfway through grad school. And you know this story, ended up on tour with the rock band Poison. And something about that, I guess, just reignited all of those little girl dreams of Hollywood and glamour and performing. Even though I wasn't performing, there were times where I was on that stage, you know, in the wings, looking out at 20, 30,000 people. And just that rush and that adrenaline, I know when I got off that tour, I went home and I was like, that's it. I'm moving to Hollywood. I know Poison. I mean, what's next? I mean, granted, you know, no job at Capitol Records was waiting for me or anything of that sort, but it was that spark of, and it's interesting that it was Poison because they're from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. They're from a little home. They're from a little tiny town, way smaller town than I'm from. And just kind of that like recognition that here's these hometown boys who did the exact same thing. They drove across country with just pennies to their name and look where they ended up. And so the spark was reignited and I came out here, you know, for all of you SMFA ninjas that are listening, this is not what we're advocating, but I came out here with no plan. I had no job lined up. I had a couple hundred dollars in my pocket. I had no apartment lined up. I had no classes lined up. I had no acting resume. I mean, outside of middle school and high school. I knew one person, you know, and, but here I am 16 years later.
But, and really that's, it's okay. Cause I hear what you're saying of that's not what we're advocating. Obviously we want people to make the move, having made a plan, having done targeting, you know, really having a foundation that will allow for a softer landing than either you or I had. I mean, I came out here having won $1,350 on a Ron Gant home run. So like, and I would never recommend picking up your life and moving across the country with just over a grand in the bank. That's crazy. So, and you did it on a couple hundred.
I think I had like $400 or something in my pocket.
It's ridiculous on so many levels, but you made it work. And that's honestly, Leah, for me, one of my favorite things about working with you has been watching the way you constantly take whatever's going on in life and you fucking make it work. Can you talk a little bit about your system for that? Or is there a system?
What is the system for just fucking making it work?
Yeah.
You know, I guess, you know, it's kind of like that old adage. You know, when somebody hands you lemons, make lemonade, right? So, gosh, yeah, you know, I've bounced back and recovered from so many things. I think that's, you know, one of the things is being fluid, being adventurous. You know, I just kind of And not many people, or maybe you can, a lot of people, I think, feel anxiety when they look at some of the way I've lived and the things that I've jumped into. But, you know, you make it work. You make it work. You know, you put a project together and it falls apart. You know, you dust off your bruises and, you know, maybe you go to the day spa for a half a day, or you go get a mani-pedi and you jump back into it. And you try not to let those things harden your heart, which, you know, is nearly impossible because we're humans and we have heart and those things are going to happen. But at the end of the day, if you're still having fun and you can still put a smile on your face, and when you book that audition, like this year for me has been really a resurgence of mainstream auditions, which is something I had pulled away from for the past couple of years, starting my own side business and doing that kind of stuff. And I find myself kind of resurging back into the mainstream auditioning. And I am thrilled just to have an audition for, you know, a network television show. And there's a part of me sometimes that feels like, wow, I don't feel like I'm in the big leagues yet. And it's like, but you know what? You're in the game. You're in the game and you're playing the game by your rules and by what you want to do. I've had a gentleman recently who's a bit of a mentor of mine, and he's an executive producer on a top television show that's out there. And we were on the plane together coming back from a project we worked on. And he basically said, you know, what all this indie stuff that you're doing, all these indie films that you're producing, why don't you just come get a job at the studio? Which basically I think he was saying, you know, I could probably make a few calls and, you know, get you into a studio position.
Like there's that Capitol Records job that wasn't waiting for you after coming off the poison.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now you know, Capitol Records didn't call, but here you go.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm not saying never. I'm definitely not saying never. And actually these days I'm starting to consider it a little bit more and more. But, you know, at the time that he mentioned this about a year or so ago, I was like, well, that's not really what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for somewhere to clock in at, you know, 8 a.m. every morning and clock out at 8 p.m. every night and have a boss, you know, ahead of me telling me what to do. I like to be able to be in this fluid flow of jumping into these indie darlings, like you call them, and having this passion project or meeting this writer who's got this story and has no idea how to produce it and isn't connected to a group of actors. And I think the next step for me, which has been a long time coming, and you and I have definitely talked about this, but what is my baby? Yeah. You know, the past few years I have been crowdfunding and producing and helping raise funds for so many people's projects, from film to theater to books. And I haven't jumped in the deep end with my baby yet. And that's something that's really kind of eating at me right now.
I want to touch on that. I want to, before we get too deep into that, I want to make sure everybody understands what that is that you do, because I'm sure a lot of people listening have thought about creating their baby, their project, and crowdfunding obviously is a big issue. Obviously, we've done it with Fourth Edition of Self-Management for Actors, and so huge thanks to you for a lot of the support that we got and the understanding of the smart ways to do it and to make and exceed your goal. What is this side business that you've created? And can you talk a little bit about what you offer and how that materialized? Like, how did you realize this was a strength?
Yeah. Well, it kind of came out of nowhere. You know, it came out of, I would say, about 12 years of being in Los Angeles. And, you know, straight off that poison tour, I went right into band booking, and I was booking bands and promoting at all of the Hollywood clubs. It just, you know, it fell into place as I met people and they heard that I had been on tour with, it was Poison, Rat, Great White, and LA Guns. The obvious thing was, hey, we need a band booker. We need a promoter. Actually, to be honest, I met this gal who was a couple years older than me at the time. I went to her nightclub and she went, wow, you know, I'm getting older and I just got married and, you know, I really can't be on at night handing out flyers anymore. I need someone like you, you know, who just moved to town and is excited to meet people. And so that's how the journey started in Hollywood. Was I would just be going out every night meeting people. From there, I realized I wanted to be back on that stage. And I would just start hosting the bands and introducing them. And from there, I realized about 4 years into my LA journey, it was actually my 29th birthday. And I had this epiphany. I had gone home. I had produced this huge party for myself at the Cat Club on Sunset Strip. I booked all the bands and I hosted it. I even convinced three of my musician friends, including Andy McKenzie, who you know, and a few other musicians to let me sing a few songs with them. And I don't mean like karaoke. Like, we actually had a couple rehearsals where I put a Leah band together and they let me sing a couple like Skid Row and Pat Benatar and songs Leah should never be, songs Leah should never be allowed to sing, but it was my birthday.
And like, sing whatever the fuck you want.
Exactly. I did Meredith Brooks, Bitch. I did Joan Jett, I Hate Myself for Loving You. And I went home that night sober because I was producing the whole thing and alone. And I thought to myself, you know, you're 29 years old. You're 3,000 miles away from your family. What are you doing? You're booking other people's events. And this is all going to tie back into exactly where we are right now. You're promoting other people's things. And it's not like you're making even minimum wage off of this crap. So that was when, you know, those moments in life where things just kind of start to fall away and move away. At that moment, one of the clubs closed down. One of the clubs fired me. One of the clubs changed directions. And a gym called Beverly Hills Health and Fitness Center, over by the Beverly Center, that I had put in an application in like a year and a half prior, calls out of the blue. And they say, hey, are you still looking for a job? Maybe. Oh, well, the new girl, the receptionist, you would start the 6 a.m. shift. So my life went from going to bed around 4 a.m. to having to be at the front desk at 6 a.m. And in that moment, and at that gym, there were a ton of actors, writers, producers, directors. And somewhere along the lines, I got the information for the first acting class that I took here in L.A., which was Ivan Marcota's school. Called Vanmar Academy. And Ivan passed away just about 2 years ago. And I got to reconnect with a lot of them. He was one of my first mentors in this town. And thus began the acting journey. And I had some really cool successes in the very beginning. They were very ornate. They were very natural. I got to be on Deadwood for 3 seasons, which was an amazing experience. I got to be on Robot Chicken for 4 seasons, which was ridiculously incredible. And I had these little successes. But at the end of the day, and this comes back to present day where this side business came up, I was still a struggling actor. Paycheck to paycheck, you know, deciding whether do I pay my full rent with this money or do I use part of this to pay rent and part of this for food and part of this to put in my gas? And wait, what about cat food and cat litter? Crap, I don't have enough to cover the basics. And so in 2012, I took a break. I subletted my townhouse and I packed up my kitty cats and I drove back to Philadelphia. And I say I took about 10 months off, but really I was going to New York for auditions and I was all over the place. But I was burning the candle at both ends and I was exhausted. And I had to finally say, it's okay to just have nothing on your schedule today, but going to yoga class and hanging out with mom at age 36, 37, you know, and trust that this is okay. This is where I'm supposed to be right now. And in that break, I took a course online, and it was, you know, a bunch of different gals online that would meet once or twice a week in a phone call. And what I got out of that course is that if she could do this, I could do this. And by this, I mean making money and charging people off of the knowledge that you have, off of something that you have to offer. And that was my big takeaway from what I had done there. And so before I came back to LA 10 months later, I said, I can't just go back and be the struggling actress again. I can't do that. I'm too old. I'm tired. I've been through too much. Like, I don't know what else to do. I was on 2 Emmy award winning shows and now what, you know? And this is after, you know, all of our experience and, you know, and I've got my marketing down and I've got my branding down and I've got all that stuff down. But it's a, never-ending journey. So I came back to LA and I decided to just put a PayPal button up on my website. And I started real low, you guys. Don't start this low. But I started at $30 an hour. And I call
girl.
It, I know, but that's what I started at. I started at $30 an hour and I decided to call it a coffee chat. Because everyone,
that's basically
and their
all
brother,
you can afford for fucking $30. Come on.
Right. You know, but everyone and their brother since moving to LA was always, hey, Leah, I have a friend who wants to come out and act. Can you help them? Hey, Leah, my friend's band is going to be in Hollywood. Can you book them a show? Hey, Leah, Joe wants to be in voiceover. Can you hook him up? You know, everyone would turn to me with these questions and flattered that you think I can help you with all of these things and do all these things for you, and flattered that you don't realize I'm as struggling and financially broke as I am. But let's be real, Leah needs to survive and make money. And so it began as a simple, you know, ask me anything. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, there were people asking me about hosting and voiceover and things like that. And then the climate changed. And I had been involved as an actress in a couple crowdfunding projects that were successful. Next thing I know, every email I'm getting is, hey, so-and-so says, you know, hey, Helena Santos says you're great at crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. Hey, Mark Gant says you're great at crowdfunding. Hey, Bonnie Gillespie says you're great at crowdfunding. And for a minute, I had to go, wait a second. Why aren't you guys saying Leah's a great actress? Leah's a great voice actor. Leah's a great host. Why is everybody referring me these jobs? And so it was an ego check for a second. I had to like be like, what the heck's going on here? And that was 3 years ago. And from there, you know, I actually took your mastermind on entrepreneurship. And oh my gosh, Bonnie, you know, so many leaps and bounds while we were working together on that. You know, because of you, I now know what income, you know, I've got my income stream separated and what's coming where and which ones need more watering and things of that sort. And I'm happy to say I charge $200 an hour now for what was 30.
Yay!
Right? And I've had to create other packages. So I now have coaching packages and management packages and things of that sort. But the long story short of it is people hire me to either consult, coach, and or manage their crowdfunding campaign. And my numbers are something like, and when I say my numbers, I'm only really counting the people that I got full on in the trenches with. I'm not counting, you know, SMFA, where I just, you know, gave some advice to and helped out on the sidelines. I'm not counting those people that I had one session with and they walked away with 10 pages and notes and they were successful. I just count the people that I got in the trenches with for 30 days. And I think it's about 47 out of 50 wins now, something
amazing.
Like that. Something around like $3.5 million.
Which is amazing, because in the crowdfunding culture, the way it is now, that's not the win percentage. Most people create campaigns that fall short. And
I think it's like 50. I think it's like 50% is what the actual like national average is like 50% of all campaigns fail.
So I don't want you to give away the goods, but what would be your number one tip for folks who are creating their first crowdfunding campaign, especially now when there's a little bit of, you know, donor fatigue? Like, crowdfunding's been going on for so long that people are just like, oh my God, not another play that you need me to spend money on here, or, you know, whatever. What is your number one tip that if people do this thing, it actually can make the difference, other than hiring you, which of course I always recommend?
Okay. I don't know that I can do one. I might have to do three.
All right.
I would say to take your time in the pre-production stage. This is a production. Do not rush the pre-production stage. And by that, I mean your video and your rewards and your text and your graphics and your social media. All of that falls under pre-production. So do not rush that pre-production stage. Number two would be personal outreach. And by personal outreach, I do not mean MailChimp. I do not mean any kind of newsletter. I mean one by one by one by one. I recommend that my clients on day one, anyone involved in that team should have a minimum of 100 personal emails drafted and ready to go. And by personal, I mean, hey, Bonnie, saw you just celebrated your anniversary. Wow, congratulations. You know, hey, Leah, I saw your film just premiered last week. Congratulations. Something that they know you took 5 seconds out of your day to look on their Facebook page and see what's going on in their world before you ask them to back your project. And then the rest can be copy-paste, but it needs to start off with a couple personal sentences. And then my last tip would be that it is so much more intensive work than you could ever imagine. Mm-hmm. You must be posting on social media all day long, every day, multiple times, in all time brackets. And part of that is that everyone has different utilizations for their social media. Mm-hmm. Some people only check in the morning before work. Some people only get on their lunch breaks. Some people only get on at dinner time. Some people are late night. And if you're only posting in one of those time frames, guess what? They are never, ever, ever going to see your posts. So you need to make sure that you are consistently hitting all forms of users, whatever time of day that they log in and check their social media.
Leah, everything you're saying is total truth. You know, having run a successful crowdfunding campaign for the fourth edition of Self-Management for Actors, the number one takeaway that I got from you was we were about a week and a half in, and you told Keith, Bonnie's messing this up. She's not reaching out to every single person who is donating or sharing or liking or commenting. And she needs to make that personal effort. And I was like, oh, I didn't want to be a bother. I didn't want to be like in their face more. I thought that was a bad idea. And as soon as I started just sending emails saying, oh my God, thank you for the $5. You're amazing. Those $5 are going to make a difference. And I so appreciate you. And by the way, like you said, congratulations on XYZ that's going on in your life. It became exponential. At that point, that there was something about that personal contact, and I went, oh, because we're not robots, we're humans. And that human to human connection is, I think, what's at the foundation for successful campaigns. And that's why you're so great at what you do and how you teach this. I want to know, what is your baby? Because that's what we started out on with this. And I took you down the crowdfunding journey because I know a lot of people have questions about that. But I want to know, what is your baby?
You know, it's, I think what's been great for me about the crowdfunding thing relating to my baby is that I have been able to be, you know, some of my crowdfunding clients, that's it. You know, I work on them. I'm the crowdfunding campaign. That's it. Others I've come on full on producer, and others I've come on as an actor and producer. And so a few of the projects that I'm connected with, such as Nowhere Land, as a feature film that I coached the crowdfunding and came on as a producer. We just had our world premiere last week at the Grove. We won Best Drama. We won Best Picture. Woo! We won Audience Choice Awards. And now Robin, who is the writer, director, producer, is, you know, we've got more festivals coming up, and now we try to sell this, you know, and get our investors' money back, and then maybe even make some money of our own. You know, who knows? Wow, what a concept. But what this has done for me, and I use her as an example because she was a one-woman show. She's the writer. She's the director. She's the executive producer. She did most of the casting. She even did some of the damn editing and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I use Robin as an example and all of my clients as an example because I've been able to watch other people jump into the deep end, put everything they have on the line, their blood, sweat, and tears. I think Robin used up every penny of her savings on top of the crowdfunding campaign, on top of the investors. And there's this fulfillment, right? There's this accomplishment. And so I think that's, for me, that's that step is I'm proud of all my clients and I'm super happy and I feel accomplished and I can celebrate with us. But what's my baby? So I have this big chalkboard wall now. I have this big wall in my bedroom that I painted chalkboard. And actually, Jen Page kicked my butt into doing this a month or so ago. And so I have columns. So one column says book, because I have a book. At least one, probably two, probably three or four that I need to write. So the one column says book, and it has some steps. including, which is something that it's really funny because I just moved about 9 months ago, got all my stuff out of storage. And one of the things I did a couple months ago, I had that nasty flu and I was on a commission for 4 days. And I read through every journal that I've ever had that I still had with me from, I think they date it back to about 1990. Not my diaries when I was a little girl, but journals from like college on up. And not just journals, but apparently I kept all my day planners too, mm-hmm. which I don't know why, but I read through them all. And then most of those I tossed because I thought, you know, if I died, is my mom really going to sit here and read through my day planner? Like,
what'd you do on that Wednesday? Yeah.
But, you know, looking through those, you know, just sparked obviously a whole bunch of emotions and a whole bunch of things. And so there's just one left in this pile of humongousness because then I wasn't sick anymore. Right. And so I stopped being sick and I jumped back into life and there's just one left. So at the top of that chart says, finish reading the journals. And there's just one left. And it's just been sitting there like it's just some random journal. I don't know that it has any significance other than it's just the last one that I haven't gone through. And then the next step would be to start pulling stories from those journals and figure out the way. So there's the book. Then I've got film, right? And why have I not produced my own story yet? You know, even a short, you know, something that I write. Now I do have to give props to Ellie Schiff, who is also an SMFA alum, and Keith Johnson participated in this as well. But Ellie wrote me a short last year called The Glass Slipper. He sent me the script. I opened it up. I had no idea what he was sending me. He just, hey, can you read this? I open it up and the first line says, a youthful woman named Leah is sitting at the coffee shop checking her online dating messages. And I was like, oh, wait.
And you're like, Allie, you don't know me.
What's this about? You know? So we did that, you know, and it was so much fun. It was a one-day shoot and we did it as a Sag New Media, you know, we did spend a little money, you know, everybody got, you know, we tried to pay everybody a little bit something, you know, you got to pay your hair and makeup, you got to feed people. You know, I put in 500 of my money, Ellie put in 500 of his money and we made it happen. So that's a step in the right direction. But I feel like there's something bigger bubbling inside. So there's the film column, which is basically like figure out what story you want to tell and start outlining it. Then there's the hosting column, because I still just hugely love standing up on stage and you know, one of my dreams was to like host like the VMAs, not that they're really relevant anymore, but something. I just want to, you know, be hosting something glamorous pertaining to music and or acting and charity. And then the last column, of course, is voiceover. You know, I had a wonderful start in voiceover, you know, just kind of fell. I met the executive producer creator of Robot Chicken on Friendster, of all places. That's how that connection started. And so I've had all these magical moments that have happened in my career. You know, you and I met randomly on MySpace, Matt and I met randomly on Friendster. You know, I was upgraded from, you know, non-union background on Deadwood to someone who had a speaking part and had her own trailer. I cried that day. I went in, this is after 3 seasons, as, you know, non-union background, and I had been Taft Hartlead on Robot Chicken. It was going to happen one way or the other. You know, I almost was Taft Hartlead like twice on one day. Like that's how like the conglomeration of it all came together. I literally went from my speaking role, my first gig on Robot Chicken in Santa Monica, and raced up to Santa Clarita because Deadwood needed me because they were reshooting something that I was prominently featured in. And I literally called the background casting and said, I got hired on this new cartoon called Robot Chicken. It didn't even exist yet. It was season 1. So no one knew what Robot Chicken was yet at the time, but I just got hired. This is going to be by Taft Hartley. It's like a $750 paycheck. And they went, you know what? Let's call production and see. They came back to me and they said, Deadwood said, get here when you can. So I went from one to the other. The first person I saw on set that day was Timothy Oliphant, who, you know, was one of the stars of our show. But he also worked down at the gym that I was the front desk girl at. So he, you know, so he knew me from there as well. And so I just remember, like, I literally, he was being walked to set by one of the ADs, and I'm racing across the dirt. And I think I kind of like jumped on him and gave him like a hug, but like almost like, you know, like arms and leg hug. I was like, oh my God, I just got my Taz Hartley. And you know, and he was so thrilled for me, that everybody was so thrilled for me. And that next time when they called me, I came in, I go into the wardrobe to get my, you know, my clothes and whatnot. And they went, no, sweetie, your clothes are in your trailer over there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? And I think what actually brought the tears was when I went into the trailer and my outfit was like hanging on its own separate hanger. Like, I don't know, something about the fact that my outfit was hanging on its own hanger, like by itself, made me cry. And so they, like, I've had these amazing magical moments. And I feel like, you know, and like you say, it's all about the journey. We are exactly where we're supposed to be, when we're supposed to be there. And these magical moments continue to happen. I think it's about allowing them, right? I think there's been times where I've, you know, and maybe obviously it was when it was supposed to happen, but where I've kind of shut down, you know, to that energy, to, because it's, you know, it's exhausting to stay in that stream of eternal possibility and anything can happen. So what is my baby? you know, if you ask many of my closest, it's definitely the book. It's that rock and roll kind of memoir, you know, what we're talking about, this rock and roll memoir journey of magical moments. And a lot of people see that as a screenplay. I've never really seen it as a screenplay. I see it as a book. I have no real desire to be a screenplay writer. Mm-hmm. So any of my friends that wants to jump in and take it once I finally write it, great, sure. so it's definitely that. I've got a short film coming up that I actually just signed on a couple days ago. We're going to produce and shoot it in my house sometime in July. And I'm simply one of the lead actresses in it. Obviously, I'm going to help produce it as well. But it's six friends on a retreat. It is a horror short, but it's horror in the way that, unbeknownst to us, one of our friends at this retreat has come back with an incommunicable disease. Oh, wow. And he's highly, highly contagious, and, you know, things go from there. So it's not my typical vampires and things of that sort. And I'm working on a fantasy project with my girlfriend, Meg Pinnasalt, and this is going to be for Instagram. This is an Instagram series that awesome. We're putting together called Freaky Fairy Tales. So I get to play a Viking in that. I never pictured myself as a Viking, but that's what Meg sees me as, and she's the writer and director, so I'm a Viking.
tell everyone where to find all of this. Like, do you have a one-stop shop, or are you all over? Give us your social media. Like, where do we find you?
You know, I could give you my website, which is leahsavoli.com, but you're not going to find any of those things that I just mentioned to you on it. Guess someone needs to update her website, huh? Maybe I need to do a news update. You will find all my newest headshots. And, I did the Get in Gear with You this year, 2015 into 2016. And I have to say it was a humongous help because I, like I said, you know, I kind of feel like this resurgence back into the mainstream part of it. And I realized I'm a different type. I'm a little older. My weight is different than it was when I was on Deadwood and Robot Chicken. I was a skinny little mini. Now I've got a lot of curves on me. And I'm embracing that. And you know, I have to thank you, Bonnie, because I think Get in Gear really did that. Because I put myself out in front of not my peers that I've been on this journey with for 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. but a bunch of strangers that did not know me from Adam, with a couple, you know, alums jumping in as well. And it was interesting because, you know, I'm the horror rock and roll girl, but the Get in Gear people were like, nope, Lifetime, Hallmark, blah, blah, blah. Which my mom would die happy if her daughter starred on a Lifetime Hallmark movie. You know, my whole family would come out and celebrate. My career would be justified. This entire journey to Los Angeles and all of this, I feel like that question would be over if they could be like, oh yeah, our sister's on Lifetime this week. There she is, you know, which sounds so funny that like one job would do it. But I've always joked that, you know, my brother, when Robot Chicken had its season one premiere, it was at the Playboy Mansion. And guess who was the first one with his plane ticket to come with me
Oh,
the next
yeah. You
year?
bet.
My 27-year-old brother was first in line, you know? Because of Get In Gear, I really revamped my entire website. I went out and I got new headshots. I really went for the warm, the friendly, the teacher, the best friend, you know, all of that, you know. And then I did do another shoot because somebody was having like a really inexpensive day, and I pulled out the jean jacket and the black t-shirt, and I can still pull off the rocker chick because I am, and I always will be, and that's, you know, that's in my heart. But when you look at casting and branding, you have to go with where people are seeing you at. And if that's what people are seeing from me right now, is that warm, friendly. I forget who put it best. It was an alumni who put it best. It might have been Ellie, but I'm not positive. But someone put it best, and they said something like, that is who you are, but you are projecting a warmth and friendliness and a happiness that maybe you weren't projecting 5, 10 years ago, where you were pursuing the vampire and the true blood and all of that stuff, that there's something in your life that you've come to this point of putting out a different kind of energy. So on my website, you'll find all those new headshots, you'll find all those new demos, you'll find all, I pulled out all those clips that you told us to pull out, you know, all my Actors Access. I have so many clips and I have them all labeled, and they say whether they're drama or they're comedy. And these are things I'd never done before. So I want to thank, you know, I want to personally thank you for, you know, that Get In Gear session. It was amazing. You know, I had to redo my bio and all that stuff that I hadn't touched in 4 or 5 years. But other than that, Twitter is my jam. I prefer Twitter the most, and it's simply, actually, you guys, well, you're listening. If you're not watching this, you're listening. So it's at Leah, LEAH underscore Civoli, CEV as in Victor, OLI. Same thing on Facebook. I have a public Facebook page. On YouTube, it's slash Leah Ann 4, ANN, and the number 4, because back in the day, I loved Anne Margaret, and I wanted to be just a two, you know, a two-word name. I thought Anne Margaret, Leah Ann, but what happened was people would continually slur it into Leanne, and they were calling me Leanne instead of Leah Ann, so I had to nix that. And I'm on IMDb, you know, I'm on IMDb, I'm on Instagram, same as Twitter, at Leah underscore Savoli. So it's pretty much the same everywhere except for YouTube, but you can find me there as well. And all of the older shows that I did back on somebody's basement have all been transferred. For those of you listening, I'm sure you're aware of Somebody's Basement, which was Bonnie's baby. Gosh, that was 2010. It was 2010, and I was like honored that I had two shows premiere on the Somebody's
That
Basement
was
launch.
phenomenal, because you know this was in the early days of any kind of web distribution, and we were like, we just want a place where we can put out quality content and new original stuff 5 days a week. And the fact that you were one of our major programmers for a couple of days a week, it was phenomenal. And I'm so happy that that was able to happen and that that work continues to exist on your YouTube page. It's so smart. So smart.
Well, and you know, and the thing with that is I don't know that. I mean, I guess I can't say I don't know, but again, you were a catalyst for, yeah, I've got these shows running around in my head that I want to do with myself with my little flip camera, but I
Do
don't
it.
know. And so you were a catalyst of, well, guess what? We've got a place that we can premiere these, you know. And I don't know that without that happening, that those would have happened at that time, you
That's
know. So
it's
thank you for
awesome
that.
because I love hearing that because I've got a friend who was like, I think I want to write a book, I want to launch a class, and I'm like, great, I'm going to make you a sponsor of the showcase, and one of the things that you're giving away is copy of your book, tuition to your class. And it's like, oh crap, now I have to make it happen. I'm like, yep, if you want a deadline, I will give you one. Absolutely. Leah, I knew we were going to talk forever. I knew we would. Can you talk a little bit about the body image issue? Because I know you mentioned being curvier today than back in the skinny mini actor days. And girl, I feel you 100%. But this is actually a platform of yours, and I want to talk a little bit about that. Do you have time to go into that a little bit? Okay, cool.
Absolutely. How real do we want to get? Okay, so I think, and I'll try to keep it as condensed as
Girl, I just
possible.
Published a blog post talking about weighing 200 pounds, so you can get as real as you want to.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm 209 at the moment. So there we go.
Cheers.
cheers. All my life, and this has only been a realization in recent years, but all my life I've had some, I would say, body dysmorphia, because when I look at pictures of myself as a child, as a preteen, as a teen, that girl is not chubby, like, at all, you know? But somewhere around age 14, 15, and I don't know if something happened that I don't remember, or I haven't been able to answer that, and it doesn't actually matter. But somewhere around that age, I just stopped feeling comfortable in bathing suits and would, make excuses to not be in a bathing suit, and I loved swimming. Like, those were some of those classes that my parents let me sign up for, were swimming classes, so I'm not exactly sure what happened. And, then I moved to Hollywood and I found myself on this journey of cleanses and detoxes and crazy fad diets and all of the above. And actually, while we were shooting Deadwood, I had done the Master Cleanse. And so this is about 2005, 2006. I had done the Master Cleanse, which, for those of you listening, that's the lemon, cayenne pepper, maple syrup, water diet. And I think they recommend 7 to 10 days. I did it for 40 days straight. For 40 days, I consumed nothing but cayenne pepper, lemon water stuff. To say I was hallucinating might be an understatement. Jesus was talking to me and responding to me, talking back and forth to Jesus. I remember, saying to my mom, she's like, "You have to eat." And I was like, "Jesus fasted for 40 days." And she's like, "You're not Jesus." Well, let's see about that, right? But I think a pivotal moment came, I was actually on the set of Deadwood. One of the costumers came up to me and she said, "Sweetie, your clothes are falling off you." She said, "Do you know what size your waist is?" And I took a guess. I said, "Oh, I don't know, like a 27, 28. And she pulls down her tape measure and she's like, "Sweetie, it's a 23. And wow, we need to take your clothes in." And I'm 5'7", basically. Yeah. And, I would also do stand-in work. And, I think
you have to match.
Week,
yeah.
Yeah. I would do stand-in work. And see, and that's the thing. What's the really interesting dichotomy is I booked Deadwood because of my curves. Uh-huh. The breakdown said they were looking for girls with natural curves, natural boobs, natural hair. I believe the breakdown at the time might have said a size 8, size 10 is what they were looking for. But subconsciously, and I'm not blaming this on HBO or anyone in particular at all, but subconsciously, all of the lead actresses were super, super skinny. So I don't know if subconsciously I was taking that in going, sure, I've got this background role, this, speak once in a while role, but the really thin women are the ones that are the leads. Yeah. And so I think that's just, that's something that I've come to realize recently. And that was just something in there. And so I went on this journey of all these cleanses and detoxes and really messed with my metabolism. And then about 5 years ago, I skyrocketed the other way. And I actually recently saw a doctor and finally got a diagnosis of binge eating disorder. I mean, I knew that's what I've had for the past couple of years, but finally got a diagnosis and was prescribed a medication that the FDA just approved of. So at this moment, my insurance denied it because it's also used for other things. And it's just now been classified that you can use it for binge eating disorder as well. But about 5 years ago, went on this journey and found myself in a depression and just found myself eating, nonstop. Carbs and sugar is my thing. I Starbucks multiple times a day, French fries and fast food stuff. And it came about, there was a guy involved with that journey. And there was a lot of things. There was a guy involved. There was some career betrayals involved. There were some backstabbing things. It was just like a big conglomeration of just junk hit me in 2010.
But your method of dealing was food. Yeah.
Right, because I was no longer, the young girl who might go out and drink too much
Right.
or might partake in any kind of illegal substance, or even promiscuity, So what was
Right.
left? Food. And so in that journey, I started to embrace the journey, what I was going through, because I realized that I could do the Master Cleanse again and drop 50 pounds in 40 days if I wanted to starve myself and do it that way again. But what was at the crux of this? The crux of this is self-love. And I didn't love myself when I had a size 23 waist, like deep down inside. I mean, I'm a really good actress, so you might think I love myself and I'm super happy and everything's fine and dandy. But obviously, there was something deeper inside that I needed to deal with. So one of the blogs that I've consistently been writing for Ms. in the Biz over the years was a blog called gosh, what's the name of my blog? I just blanked on the name of it. One blog I write is the Coffee Chats is the Business, and then the other one is my journey. So oh, weighing in, that's what I call it, is weighing in.
It's
And
good.
it's my journey to self-love. And the pinnacle point of where the activism came in was one day I was feeling good. This is about 2.5, 3 years ago. And I posted a selfie on Facebook. And it wasn't your typical, head and shoulders selfie, but it was literally like, knees up kind of selfie. I was in Las Vegas. I was there for a Guns N' Roses concert with some friends. I had jeans and a t-shirt on. I took a selfie and I posted it. And the first comment was from a man that I hadn't seen in years. I had done some extra work with probably about 10 years prior. And his first comment was, "Leah, I've seen you look better." Right? And here I was
Yeah,
feeling good.
the rage I have is I can't even. Because
What?
yeah, who
I didn't even get a chance to respond before like my Facebook community attacked. Like I didn't even get a chance to respond. And it made me think, who are we in this society that we've come to think that that's okay? Celebrities deal with that every day. But because of Facebook and social media and having some, keyboard warriors, as they're referred to, why do we think that that's okay to comment on someone else's appearance? Or how do we know what they're going through? Any of those things. And so by the end of the day, I reached out to a gal I know, Adrienne Curry, who was Tyra Banks's first top model. I reached out to a gal I know, Elisa Teague, who is the editor of Cupcake Quarterly, which is a magazine all about body positivity and what's the term of the clothing? She uses pinup clothing. I reached out to Amber Kriz, who does Body Heart,
Love,
which is all about self-love. I reached out to Lin Chen, who does actually Helena connected me with Lin Chen, who does a blog on the actor's diet and food. And by the end of the day, I had a panel and a group put together called All Shapes and Sizes Welcome. And we have now spoken at Kamikaze, WonderCon, Comic-Con in San Diego multiple times, Ventura County, a blogger conference in Hollywood. I would say we about 10 panel appearances in the past 2.5 years, and starting to get reached out to by colleges and things of that sort. And it's a rotating panel. I have some girls that come back regularly, and we now do have a website, all shapes and sizes welcome.com, but we also have a Facebook page. I'm not as active on the Facebook page as I would like to be, but I do post relevant things when I see them. But it's really just a hub to stay connected for when we are going to be out in public speaking. And I got to tell you, the first Comic-Con panel we did, a little girl stood up, and this is a room with about 400 or 500 people in it. And she stood up to ask a question at the end, and she's about age 9, age 10. And she got to the microphone and she said, "What do you do when you're walking down the street and you hear somebody say something mean about you?" And all 8 women on that panel fought, for the microphone. "Give me the mic, give me the mic." And it's just here, to be able to even just, I walk away from some of these panels feeling a little fake, I'm gonna be honest, because I'm still struggling with that journey, you know, like going like, oh God, how could I do that? But at the end of the day, how can you not do that?
Mm-hmm.
How can you not use that voice and share that experience so that a little girl walks away hearing these women who she's admiring, who she's looking up to? The very next day we had an autograph signing and another woman came over and she said, because of you guys, I'm not wearing Spanx under my cosplay outfit today. And we were just like, you go, girl, Woo! You know? And, you know, and I think about that often. And I think another woman who has been really integral in that journey for me is Sherry Lee Meredith. She mm-hmm. runs a show called Go Curvy. And I've been an invited guest on her show. And that fake feeling I mentioned, I had that feeling a few times in the beginning appearing on her show, because here I am surrounded by all these beautiful curvy women who have embraced their curves, who have embraced their plus size life. And I think part of that for me is some women are born curvy, and that's the way they're born. I was not born that way.
Yeah.
I became this way because of, to be honest, like punishing myself. Like I've been using food as poison rather than the healthy nourishment that it's supposed to be for us. And these are, you know, these are all things that I have realized in this journey since starting this panel. So this panel has been a healing journey for me. And so I think that's where that like little feeling of fakeness comes in, because I'm not there yet. But guess what? We're never there, right? We're never fully there. We're always rediscovering ourselves and new things. And, you know, at the end of the day, I believe that being a celebrity, being an actress, being a producer, being someone that has the ability to do something like we're doing right now,
yeah.
you know, to talk and put this out there, I think it's our responsibility to make this world a better place. And if that means sharing your own pain and your own journey and your own experiences, then that's what you do. You know, it's standing up and reminding people to vote. It's spreading information that needs to be spread. It's putting together a fundraiser because people will come because you're the host. It's asking for raffles for an event that's raising money for, you know, whatever it's raising money for, because you have those connections that you can ask for it. So I think like at the very end of the day, the whole reason, not besides the fact that I was a little girl who ran around and wanted everyone to pay attention to her and I get a high off of that, but the whole reason I think behind my journey is because I want to be able to make a difference.
Yeah.
And the bigger platform you have, the bigger difference that you can make.
Leah, I'm going to tell you, this is one of the things that I circled back around on, specifically with my weight journey, where I would say like, ah, I'm so messed up. This is so wrong. And then I would say, wait, what if the thing I'm going through right this second is the thing that's going to give me perspective that makes me a better teacher, that makes me a better healer, that makes me a better person for what I put out in the world. And I would not have this perspective if I didn't go through this. And so anytime I'm going through something that feels like a struggle related to anything, I go, because I need to have this journey so I can help someone when they're going through this journey. And I think that's kind of what you're describing. And I love that we took this extra time to talk about the body image thing in particular. I mean, because, no, especially actors are constantly bombarded with, this is how I'm supposed to look. I'm going to be criticized for just the being a woman of it all. You're going to be pelted with advice and opinions about how you look. And I think if we can get down with ourselves, and when you say, I'm feeling like I'm faking it, I'm a fraud, like I think those moments when you can go, but right now this is where I am.
Yeah.
That is the way that we help others be okay with where they are at that moment, because at every moment we're changing. That's part of what the creative journey is. We're constantly evolving. I love what you're doing. And I think this is brilliant. And I'm so happy that we spent this extra time to explore this. Remind everybody where to stay in touch with you, and get on mailing lists and learn from you and keep up with all your activities, please.
Absolutely. Can I give you one more little button on the weight
of course.
Thing?
Yeah,
and I'll do it really quickly. I've been taking acting classes again. I jumped back into acting classes about 10 months ago, and I'm having an absolute ball with it. It may have something to do with the fact that my class is mostly gay men and me, and they are just wonderful for my ego.
That's your crowd, baby.
but we, you know, they do an industry night every month. Every month we have a theme, and the last night of every month, this is Story Atlas, Hunter Lee Hughes. It's in Silver Lake. It's amazing. Very cost effective. And so he keeps it themed every month. And the last night he invites industry guests in, writers, directors, producers. And, you know, because I am all of those things as well, I really had to check into my ego and be like, you're here to be the actress. So just be the actress and embrace these industry nights. Don't think about, you know, if you've produced more films than this person has or whatever. And so I really embraced this journey. And the past 2 months, I've actually won the Best Performance of the Month award from the industry guests. They get like a score sheet that they have to vote on you and on your redirect. And it also comes with a $75 gift certificate for class this next month if you're the winner. So I've won 2 months in a row. But the last one that I won a couple weeks ago, I performed the scene in a bathing suit. Now, I wasn't told I had to perform the scene in the bathing suit. We never talked about it during the 3 weeks of rehearsals, but it takes place at a pool. It was a scene from Leaving Las Vegas. I know she's in a bathing suit. I could have got away with a sundress or a towel, but I performed it in a bathing suit. And when action starts, you drop all of that. You're the character and you're there. And I ended up with the highest score that night. And the comments from the industry guests were about how comfortable I was in my own skin, how comfortable you were in your body. And these have been the types of feedback I've been getting the past couple months from going to some workshops and auditions. So something has shifted in embracing that, you know what? I am now 40 something years old and I am 200 and something pounds. And yet the feedback that I'm getting is incredibly light years away from when I was 26 with a size 23 waist, starving myself to be that girl. So there's something really important here about there is a role for everyone. Regardless of your age, size, gender, type, color, weight, whatever. But the casting directors are not going to see that if you are not fully present in your skin, if you are in your head. And so this journey has shifted for me and has come full circle to I'm getting the best feedback as an actress I've ever gotten in my life. And it's because I'm standing in who I am right now at this moment. And I'm just embracing it because, like you said, there's a reason that it's been 5 years and I still haven't dropped this 75 pounds I've put on, you know? And maybe I'll never be 125 again. I would like to be 140, 150. And part of that is for health reasons, you know? Like, let's face it, like, you know, as we get older, you know, the more weight you put on is, you know, it's not great for your body and your organs and your joints. But there's something about standing in your power and embracing who you are that you're gonna start booking the roles. You're gonna start booking the roles. You're gonna start getting more auditions. You're gonna start getting more callbacks. You're gonna start getting people reaching out to you because they need you, which is something that SMFA and Bonnie has always taught. There is only one you. There is only one you that can do that role. And when that role is yours, it's yours. And the only thing that could get you away from a role that's yours is yourself. And standing in your own way. So I
And that
feel like
extends
I'm,
to, no, that extends to every issue, no matter what. Everybody's got that thing that they can block themselves with. They can block themselves with whatever weapon of choice. And whether it's a weight thing or it's a, oh, my gender or the way I self-identify or my age, like everybody's got something that they can throw down in front of themselves as an obstacle. And I love that the truth of what you're saying is once you're really fully, I don't know, in love with yourself and so down with who you are, then you're able to show others, like, look how awesome this is, this thing that I got right here.
And the next step has to be that tall, dark, handsome strangers gonna
Of
come out of nowhere. But
course.
that's a whole nother blab.
I know. And I knew we were going to talk forever. Leah, I love you so much. Thank you for this on so many levels. This has been, oh my God, one of my favorite talks. I really, really, really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So everybody, it's at Leah, L-E-A-H underscore Savoli, C-E-V as in Victor, O-L-I, kind of like ravioli, but Savoli. And if you put that in, you can find me Twitter, Facebook, all of the above, Instagram, or just Google.
Awesome.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Love you.
And I love you. Love SMFA. Love everything that you're doing in this community that you've built. And it's been such a long, long, long journey. And I promise to get out to a thirsty third Thursday soon.
Honey, it's only the beginning. You say this is a long journey. Girl, we still got 50 years to go. I don't know about you.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? Let's do it. Let's be 75 and be like, hey, how did we meet again? Oh, it was MySpace.
What I love is when I imagine myself 75, I'm like dragging a cigarette and I'm on a porch. I'm like, remember when? Yeah.
Well, you can have your ciggy and I'll still have my joint. So,
okay. You know. All right. All right. Beautiful. Beautiful.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.